Hello and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Bant, and along with me on this journey back to the 80s is my co-host, Jason Masick. Hello, Jason.
Is anyone here from Penthouse Magazine?
No.
Then we ain't talking. Bill, what a week I'm having.
That's right, listeners. Today's movie is the 1984 romantic comedy Splash, starring Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah, and John Candy. Directed by Ron Howard, this movie is rated PG with a running time of 1 hour and 50 minutes. It was nominated for one Academy Award, Best Writing Screenplay Written Directly for the Screen. So what is this movie about? What's on the box? If you grew up in the 1980s and went to your local video store to rent this movie, this would be the description you would find on the back of the VHS box. What's on the box? Take it away, Jason.
Tom Hanks stars as Alan Bauer, a workaholic who's convinced he can't fall in love. That is, until he's mysteriously rescued from a boating accident by the woman of his dreams. Before you can say mermaid, Alan and Madison are swept away on the tide of a hilarious and heartwarming romance. But when the world discovers Madison's secret, it's sink or swim for the two new lovers. Master filmmaker Ron Howard directs a star-studded cast, including John Candy, as Hanks's hilariously obnoxious brother in a magical tale that you'll fall for, hook, line, and sinker. Oh, yeah.
Wow, that was very punniful. I'll tell you that much. Wow.
So, Bill, what's up, buddy?
Not
much.
It's
good to be here with you tonight.
Thank you. Glad to be here with you, too.
After that synopsis from the back of the VHS box, I was thinking maybe we could do a slightly better job of recapping this film. Would you be up for that?
I'm up for it. Go for it.
All right. Let me give this a shot. Alan Bauer, played by Tom Hanks, is unlucky in love and the owner of a produce distributor in New York City who falls in love with a mermaid named Madison, played by Daryl Hannah. However, the problem is he doesn't know she's a mermaid. Alan believes Madison is an immigrant that has come to the big city for the very first time. Hijinks ensue as Madison travels about the city, learning English and all about human culture through television. Meanwhile, the antagonist, a scientist named Dr. Kornbluth, played by Eugene Levy, has his own agenda and is aware that a real-life mermaid is in their midst and reveals her true identity. After the government takes Madison into custody to be studied and experimented on, Alan, his blowhard brother Freddy, played by John Candy, and Dr. Kornbluth conspire to kidnap Madison, thereby rescuing her and releasing her back into the sea. In the end, realizing that he's found his one true love, Alan dives into the ocean to be with Madison and live happily ever after together in their underwater palace. I was thinking, hopefully, Bill Bant, that would give our listeners a little better understanding of what this movie is all about.
I think it does.
All right.
Nice job, Jason. You could have wrote that one. You could have wrote that. What's on the box?
I could have taken a stab.
There you go.
I got to work on a little bit of my cheesiness. Got to up the cheese factor.
There we go. All right, so let's move on to our earliest memories of this film. Jason, why don't you start us off?
All right, so before I did this revisit to this film, I just sat down. I looked at this segment. And I was like, what am I thinking here? What do I remember about the film Splash from 1984? And first and foremost, I have Tom Hanks jumping off the pier at the end. Absolutely. I have this image of Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah at the pier at the end. Bittersweet, right? Love that image. Then I go straight to John Candy. So funny. I go then straight to Eugene Levy, an absolute goofball scientist. I hated him as a kid. I mean, I love to hate him as a kid, right? His amazing physical comedy. Can't get enough of it. Daryl Hannah, she just had this purity and innocence, this beauty of flowing elegance, gracefulness, and also combined with a little bit of sadness. Daryl Hannah is beautiful in this movie, and that's how I remember her. And Daryl Hannah saving Tom Hanks' life underwater. Daryl Hannah's squeaking voice when she's attempting to say her name and busting out all the TVs in the store. You know, this just kind of sense of wonder. Tom Hanks is great at this. Daryl Hannah is good at this as they walk around New York City. Very romantic. I think I saw this in the theater with my family, if I am recollecting correctly. You know, it's a PG film. I'm pretty sure I saw it, and I just left with a great feeling. You know, it has a happy ending. So those are my earliest thoughts, or I should say initial thoughts that I had associated with my earliest memories. How about you, Bill?
So for me, growing up as a kid, one of my favorite shows in the early 80s was Bosom Buddies. Tom Hanks, Peter Scolari, Donna Dixon, Wendy Jo Spencer. I loved that show.
Me too,
that man. Show had such an influence on me. The comedy that they did was right up my alley as a 9-year-old. I wanted to hang out with Kip and Henry. I wanted them to be my friends. Yeah.
Can you see the opening title sequence?
Oh, yeah.
In your head?
Oh, yeah.
Running through the sprinklers?
Yes. And then
the theme song?
Tossing the ball.
Billy Joel?
Which I did not learn until years later that was not Billy Joel singing that.
It
was
someone else. Is it a cover?
Yes, it's a cover. I never knew that.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And then it would always end with them with the parking meter and running themselves out in the chairs. I love that show. And it only ran 2 seasons. I wish it kind of did a third. So I was so excited to see Kip Wilson in a movie. So I begged my parents to go see this in the theater. I wanted to see this so bad. But because it came out in the spring, we usually didn't go to the movies during school. So we weren't doing that during school. And then during the weekends, it was your sports or whatever. I didn't get to see this until I think it came out on cable. And yeah, my earliest memories is like, I cannot get the, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, the Woolly Bully song out of my head.
Sure.
Opening. Of course.
An absolutely confounding song that you can't help but dance to.
Exactly. Of course, Daryl Hannah showing up naked in front of the Statue of Liberty. That definitely stands out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a PG rated movie. And how many movies back then that were rated PG had nudity in them, which would never fly now at all. Even though I guess they have nudity on television now, but it's kind of weird.
Well, I hate to do this to you, Bill. I got to cut in real quick just on that very point that you had told me that I could watch this film on Disney Plus. So
yeah,
I did. And immediately the title card comes up that explains that this film has been modified and edited for this screen. And I was like, oh, this is an edited version. I want to see the full original version. And then I did a little research and discovered the only edit that they had made was actually through digital effects. They had covered up Daryl Hannah's nudity. They covered her butt. They lengthened her hair. And it's actually quite good, like the actual effects. Like it's almost seamless. Like you wouldn't know if you weren't looking for it. But such a memorable thing. You're talking about the rating system as it was back then. And, you know, how certain things were allowed, certain things weren't. And now how, you know, sensitive we are now. And obviously Disney has its name and reputation to protect, et cetera, with good reason. And yes, they had to put that effect in to cover up the nudity.
I almost watched this again on Disney Plus. And then as soon as I saw that title card, I went and grabbed my DVD out and popped that in instead. Because I'm like, I know what they're probably cutting out. But in case they're cutting out other things.
Right. And when she runs down the beach, when she's out of water, I believe, for the first time. Just after she rescues Tom Hanks on that island, that she runs back down the beach to the water. And her hair is basically, she has extensions. She has digital hair and extensions. Mm-hmm. And it looked great. But I understand you had to watch the original version because you needed to see Daryl Hannah's ass. I understand.
That's right.
I understand. She's a beautiful woman.
Yes. But I remember also Corned Beef's Mr. Corned Beef.
So great.
Yeah, his little two buddies that he was with, what idiots they were. And they always
kind of twin morons.
Yes.
We're not twins.
Yeah. We're not twins. We're just looking for buried treasure. I love how he says that too. Yeah. Seeing John Candy and Eugene Levy, because I just started watching SCTV reruns. Yeah. So I knew who they were, and they were just, you know, hysterical.
Absolute talents.
And just all the underwater photography stuff, which we'll get into later. But yeah, I'm a super huge Tom Hanks fan. Have been since the beginning. I've always been a fan of his, and I've always loved his films. And I'm glad we're doing our first Tom Hanks movie on Splash.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I absolutely adore this film, and rewatching it, fell in love with it all over again. What a pleasure, Bill. Honestly, it's just a joy, just a true joy to watch this movie. And I thought this was a good segue, since you were talking about Tom Hanks in his first feature film here. You know, he had just making that transition from television to film. I rewatched an interview he had not too long ago with Conan, talking about that very transition and how he had, you know, would go to shoot Bosom Buddies with Peter Scolari, and they just had a rhythm, and they would do read-throughs, and they had to be very big, and it was very, you know, all of his lines were comedy, and so he was used to just being kind of loud and funny and being physical and the whole thing. And then when getting the role for Splash as the leading man, he goes in to read for Ron Howard, and there was the entire crew there, and the executives and the other actors, and he realizes in the read-through that he doesn't really have that many quote unquote funny lines. All John Candy and Eugene Levy really have the belly busters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he was trying to take these kind of straightforward lines of dialogue and pump them up a little bit and give them a little bit more energy. And Ron Howard had to take him aside afterward and say, look, I know what you're doing. I know what you're trying to do here. It's okay. That's not your job. Your job here is just to love the woman. That's all you need to do. Just love the woman. Let John Candy and Eugene Levy, let them be the funny guy here. And I just thought that was funny, because he talked about how he thought he almost lost the job by overdoing it during the read-through, the initial read-through for Splash. But it was that difficulty making that transition from comic lead in television to then a little bit more. It's a comedic movie, but it was almost as if he had a bit of a more of a dramatic leading role within that comedic movie.
Yeah, and that's such a credit to Ron Howard, too, because his background was in television.
Sure. Also, back to my initial point, Matt, you know, this is kind of where, you know, we may end up doing a different segment here, just because I keep thinking of like this then and now, kind of how obviously we are revisiting 80s films that hold a lot of nostalgic memories for both of us. And, you know, how did we see these films? How did we perceive these films then? What was our perspective as young men going through adolescence versus now in our late 40s, mid to late 40s, looking at these films? So it's that then and now kind of back and forth, you know, when watching these films. And it's really watching. It's just been a fascinating journey and an experience thus far, just what, a few films into this podcast, overall of a duality within me while watching these films, is just a dual perspective, because the memories are just all blending, and then I'm forming new ideas and ways of looking at things while watching it, you know, at present. And I'm watching this film, Bill, and as I mentioned, what a real joy. It was just, it's so much fun, because I could sit down for almost 2 hours. This film is just under 2 hours long, and it just flies by, because the performances don't miss a beat. They're just very honest and very fun, and they buy into the concept, as do I, hook, line, and sinker, as the original What's on the Box synopsis mentions, because this is a fantasy slash fairy tale romantic comedy. This film is meant for pure entertainment. Don't question it. I have to look at this movie through the eyes of a child, as the eyes of a 10-year-old, as I was when I first saw the film. And it made me think of I was listening to a great podcast recently about the recent Christopher Nolan film. And yes, I am going to compare Tenet to Splash in a strange way. If you can go down this road with me, take a walk with me, Bill, if you will.
Go ahead.
I'm looking at films now, and I'm so sometimes consumed with breaking down film and looking at it from as a filmmaker, producer, actor, writer myself, and, you know, just doing some sort of deep analysis and forgetting to just sit back and just watch and be entertained and enjoy the escapism of it all. And that's what I feel this film represents. And I could use the cliche as it is often heard in these podcasts today, and with good reason, or, you know, rightfully so, that they don't make them like they used to. And I don't believe they do. And that's okay. It'll be fine. We're going to survive. But it's with a bittersweetness kind of I watch a movie like this where I can go, ah, oh, I believe in true love. I believe in love at first sight. You know, to watch Daryl Hannah as literally a fish out of water exploring New York City, and she has such a wonderful look of just discovery the entire time, and she's looking around with wonderment as Tom Hanks is looking at her with wonderment in his eyes, and there's an innocence to all of it and such deep, you know, romanticism that it tugs at my heartstrings. It works for me. And it's always fun to watch characters go through that process of discovery. And I think Hanks himself is really a master at that as an actor. And you watch him in films like Big and or Castaway when he has moments of discovery and either looking at things with through a new lens, so to speak. But this film really is about 100% unconditional love, the ultimate romantic fantasy fairy tale. The one true love that we're meant to be with, immediately recognizing that and the connection and trying to make it work. And Tom Hanks, what can you say, man? It, you know, I adore the guy because I think he's one of the more honest actors and leading men we have. And I buy it.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before. Usually when I try to go to a movie or watch a movie for the first time, I really do try to watch it and just be like, okay, you got me for your 2 hours. Just entertain me. And then if I like the movie enough, I'll go back and watch it again and then really try to break it down, analyze it and stuff like that. Watching this, knowing we're going to do a podcast and I have to prepare for it, and I'm watching it and I'm just entertained again. And I'm really just trying, I'm getting caught up in the movie and I'm like, oh, I got to write notes. I got to, you know, write stuff down I want to talk about with this movie. But yeah, it is just a fun, entertaining movie. There's nothing deep in it. There's no social commentary behind it.
Doesn't need to be overthought.
Exactly. It's just a fun movie. It's just a fun family film to enjoy.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Daryl Hannah's performance. And another movie where Fish Out of Water that I loved for performance, the fish out, was Amy Adams in Enchanted.
Sure. You know, to be honest, I haven't seen the film. I know of it. She's a consummate pro. Please go on about that film. I'm just not personally familiar with the
story of it. Yeah, I would say any fish out of water story, that is probably one of the best ones. She is amazing at that. She was so good. I was like, why was she not nominated for an Oscar? Because I believed that she came from a cartoon world and was just so enamored, and just her levity about everything and just her... just the way she was so in awe of this new world. I bought it. And you definitely see it. You know, you mentioned with Daryl Hannah too, being fascinated by a crossing sign light.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's those little cool moments.
You see it through her eyes. Like, don't you kind of, you really.
Yeah. The wonderment. It's just the wonderment of just seeing everything new for the first time. It's just like a child taking them to Disneyland and they see Mickey in person. And it's just like that kind of thing. Yeah. So that's what you get in that film.
I totally agree. And I think Enchanted, didn't that kind of take Amy Adams to the next level in her career? I mean, that film, she kind of jumped right after that to a whole nother.
Yeah, because she got some notices and some smaller roles that she got. But yeah, I think this was
really her been first working, but that film really kind
major
of
major role that
catapulted really her.
Yeah.
And I think after her performance, too, at the Oscars, when she sang, she was wonderful. I'm an Amy Adams fan, so
yeah. And it's funny because that was one of those movies like I don't really want to watch this, and man, she got me so bad on that one. And I'm a huge fan. If she's in a movie, I gotta watch it because she's an amazing actress.
Well, you sold me on it. I'll have to go back and watch Enchanted for the first time. And also real quick, Bill, I failed in making my point connecting Tenet to Splash, but the point was that Tenet was the latest Christopher Nolan tentpole production, and the film is a fascinating topic of or subject of discussion, and it's a complicated film in a lot of ways. And he had mentioned in an article, Christopher Nolan, that is, that film is for entertainment. You're supposed to sit back and just be in awe at what's happening. Just watch it. And just, like I mentioned, escapism earlier, just go to this, get into this world and have fun. That is the purpose of the movie and movies in general. I think with a lot of, or at least a handful of his movies, they lend themselves to question and to wanting to figure out, because he presents them as puzzles in a way to be figured out. So I think there's a little bit of self-contradiction within a statement. However, I agree. It's as if I have to, you know, it reminded me in that moment to just, I'm going to watch Tenet again and not think about it. Let's actually do this exercise, not think about it. What was a real pleasure about watching Splash from the year 1984? It was like, there was no effort in, I could just relax and be like, I'm just going to watch some real pros do their thing and take me into a whole nother world. And it was great.
Yeah.
Didn't have to question it at all.
Yeah, Jason, I don't need to go on YouTube and find 800 videos to explain the ending of Splash for me. Right. If I YouTube and put Tenet, there's going to be, you know, 1,000 videos explaining what Tenet was all about and stuff like that. So, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. But I guess when you're watching Enchanted, I'll have to go watch Tenet.
You know, it's great that you bring that up, because I did watch I started watching a YouTube video about Splash, about how Splash is different watching it as an adult. How you pick up on things in Splash only as an adult. I could only get through maybe 40 seconds of the video because it was a dark take. It was saying that basically going, oh, they fall in love so quickly. That would never happen. And as adults, we know that because we are adults and we have more experience and we know this just is a fantasy and it's a bunch of BS. And I was like, no, I don't want to watch this. This takes away from that's not the point. Point is, it's a fantasy.
Exactly.
That's the point. And it's
supposed there's a mermaid to be fun. In the movie right there. You know, this is not real.
Well, that's the thing, is that it can actually happen within the context of the movie. That's what a movie is. And that's how I kind of was raised, if you will, within film, is that the fantasy is real. On film, you can make fantasy real, if that makes sense. So to sit back and look at it going, oh, as an adult now, I watch this and go, oh, this is a bunch of bullshit. Well, you can take that point of view. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. It's art. That's kind of the point. But I choose to just look at it now more as I just appreciate it for what it is. I think, it allows me to be part of a fantastical world for 2 hours, and that's it.
I guess he would kill Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. All right. Let's move on to some favorite scenes. What do you got for favorite scenes, Jason?
All right. These are some scenes that blew my skirt up. I'm going to start right from the beginning of the film, or near the beginning of the film. I cannot get enough of the secretary at Bauer Produce, Mrs. Stimler.
Yes.
Recently received some head trauma from a lightning strike. She is so funny. Mrs. Stimler, unfortunately, is having some issues as a result of that lightning strike. And so she's not quite all there. And the first scene when we meet Mrs. Stimler, when we have both Alan Bauer and his blowhard brother, Freddie Bauer, played by John Candy, come into the office, and Alan, played by Tom Hanks, says to Mrs. Stimler, are there any messages? And she replies, yes. Long pause. Alan says, well, what are they? It's just like, and it goes from there, because she's, again, just a bit confused. Absolutely hilarious. That's a quick scene that blew my skirt up. Tom Hanks meeting Eugene Levy for the first time on the beach. Eugene Levy playing the role of Dr. Walter Kornbluth. Absolutely hilarious. Dr. Kornbluth is very skeptical as to why Tom Hanks is there, because Tom Hanks had a long night and he's still wearing a tuxedo after a wedding, and he ended up on the wrong side of the island while he's trying to get to Cape Cod. And he runs into this doctor, and the doctor is like, why are you here? Why are you asking me how to get to the island? And is very suspicious of Tom Hanks. And there's just, like you just mentioned, the appearance of the twins that are Dr. Kornbluth's associates that are absolute morons. So funny. And then I'm going to go over this third scene real quick. Man, Tom Hanks is head over heels in love with Madison, a.k.a. the mermaid, played by Daryl Hannah. And he, I believe at some point, you know, after she's gone around New York City and she's shopped at Bloomingdale's and she's been on her own, and then he joins her. But he at one point goes back to the hotel or the apartment high rise that he lives in, and she's not there. And it freaks him out. He's like, where did she go? I believe that's, you know, after she's gone on this shopping spree, unbeknownst to him. So he freaks out and he goes in the apartment. She's not there. He runs back out and he's in the hotel lobby and he needs to get in the elevator as soon as possible. So he hits the buttons on both sides of the corridor of the lobby to see which elevator.
Jason, I do that all the time now because of that movie. I do that all the time. Every time I'm in a hotel.
I can't wait to do that in front of like a crowd of strangers in a hotel at some point to see if anybody gets the reference. It's brilliant. It's hilarious. For the people listening, if you haven't seen the film, there's that moment where he's just desperate and he needs to get to the elevator. So he hits the buttons on both sides to see which elevator car is going to arrive first. And he stands in the middle with his feet outstretched and his arms outstretched to waiting, just prepared for the first one to arrive so he can bolt to it as soon as possible. It's just a funny physical moment, and only Tom Hanks can pull that off.
Yeah, every time I see two elevators like that, yep, I hit both buttons and wait in the middle.
Absolutely hilarious. Yep, so that's more of a moment than a scene, I would say, but I wanted to rattle those first three off real quick for you. Why don't you take it from here?
Okay. So one of my first favorite scenes is when Alan finds Madison in the department store. So Alan got to go to work. So Madison leaves by herself to go to Bloomingdale's. And as you mentioned earlier, Alan comes back to the apartment, doesn't find her, finds out she's in Bloomingdale's. And we go to the scene where Madison is in the TV department store and she's working out to the video.
Yeah.
And the TV department manager, played by James Ritz, he is hilarious. He's a steam stealer in there, because at first he's trying to tell her that the store's closing and she's just working out, ignoring him. And just his reaction, like, we'll just give her another minute. She's working out. Let's give her another minute. That is just great. And then Alan shows up and, you know, the team manager's like, oh, is she with you? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. She's like, yeah, we're trying to tell her store's closed. And she's not paying attention. And then Alan says the line, like, well, she doesn't know English. And then Madison turns and says, hi, Alan, how was your day? And the manager's line, because it's great, it's so straight. He's like, I didn't go to college, but that sounds like English. That line, I laugh every time. It's amazing.
It got me. I could see it coming, hear it coming, and he does it. He delivers it with such a deadpan. It's brilliant. I couldn't agree more. So funny, man. By the way, Bill, I laughed out loud here in my apartment by myself watching. And I know my walls are a little thin. I was wondering what my neighbors must think, but I was laughing out loud this entire movie. And that was one of those moments. It's a great moment. Good call.
Yeah. What else you got?
I laugh out loud every time. I remember the moment, and I saw it coming. It was when Tom Hanks comes back and gives Daryl Hannah, who I may just call DH or Madison from here on in.
All right.
Hanks gives DH a gift, and it's in a really nicely gift-wrapped box. And she just takes it and takes such a wonderful pause. She examines the box. And as we all think, you know, obviously we're used to, we look at a box, we kind of do look at it from the outside, shake it around, see what's inside of it, or try to figure out what's inside of it. And, but she thinks the box itself with the bow on it is the gift. Brilliant. Her performance is actually quite good in that moment. It gets me every time. I don't know. It just hits my funny bone when she's just like, oh, it's beautiful or whatever.
And there's something else I've stolen for this movie, where like my kids will give me a gift for like my birthday or Christmas. Yeah. And I'll be like, oh, thank you so much. And they'll be like, Dad, you got to open it. Dad, you got to open it. Yeah, exactly.
So that, I love that scene. And then this scene, oh my goodness. This is, okay, guys, ladies and gentlemen, this is pre Ace Ventura 2, When Nature Calls, I believe was the title of that sequel. This is pre Jim Carrey getting hit with paralyzing darts.
Oh, yes.
This scene in Splash, this is like, for me personally, my viewing experience, the original, is when Tom Hanks goes after Dr. Kornbluth, who's in the dentist's office and was about to receive a painkiller, basically like a Novocaine shot or injection into his mouth. And a little bit of a scrap ensues between Hanks and Eugene Levy. And anyway, Eugene Levy ends up injecting the painkiller into his thigh. And Tom Hanks drags him out of the dentist's office. And basically Eugene Levy's trying to like run with him, but his leg is completely numb. So he's dragging him. And it's, again, kind of a visual thing. You got to see it. Look it up on YouTube if you can. It's brilliant. Yes. His physical comedy, Bill, it's just laugh out loud. And he's wonderful.
One of the Dudley Moore movies, I think it's 10, where Dudley Moore gets a whole bunch of Novocaine and he goes home and he's trying to drink and it's just, he just keeps blubbering it. But yeah, those two of the funniest bits. See,
that's why I say my experience, because it really, I'm sure there's people out there, and please tweet us, emails, whatever it is, please.
Yeah, just the way he kind of, he had to drag him down that hallway. That's the only way he would have gotten down, the way he was shuffling that leg. It's hilarious. It is funny.
He's
the
like
way,
flopping it around.
Exactly. The way that leg shoots out. Yeah, that's a great scene.
What do you have next?
So next I have a little more on the serious side is when they finally capture Madison. They let Alan go. And Freddie, played by Giant Candy, brings Alan back to the office and they have the talk. And I think what I really loved about that scene was the fact that no matter what is going on, now Freddie's Alan's older brother. Freddie is behind his brother 100%.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. He's with the mermaid. He's just so happy for his brother that he found love. And now he's so mad at him because Alan is now doubting himself because he finds out Madison's a mermaid. And just like, you didn't see how happy you were.
Yeah.
He's almost like, you son of a bitch. You have something that most people would kill for.
Right.
And you're about to piss it away. I just love how that scene was. It was just like, I'm sticking up for my brother. Even the funny scene when he brings him in, he's like, haven't you ever seen anyone sleep with the fish before? Get back to work. You know, this is hilarious. It starts funny. But then it gets really serious. And I just loved how the scene played out. And I thought, John Candy's known for, you know, being funny and boisterous and stuff like that. But this really definitely showed a little dramatic side for him, which he would, you know, later do in his career. But it definitely showed there was two sides to John Candy. And I thought that was a pretty good performance.
I love that scene. Thank you for breaking it down for us, Bill. I have a lot of thoughts regarding it. First of all, as you mentioned, John Candy's performance, I think a lot of wonderful comedians, especially from that genre and that time period, whether it be John Candy, John Belushi, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, had that ability, had that range to go from one extreme to the other in the matter of moments, seconds, to go from a very loud, high volume comedic show or showy performance to then just a really tender, connected moment with another actor or character in a scene. It's quite moving and impressive to watch if you really think about it. Especially when Freddie says to Alan, he says, don't you know people would kill to have that kind of happiness? I'm not happy. He says that, like, I'm not happy. And it's a testament to Candy as a performer. Obviously, we miss him dearly because he was one of the true giants of comedy and film throughout that time period, but also it's a testament to the writing, Bill. You know, as from a writing standpoint, I am such a big fan of, you know, relationship development. I know that's an obvious statement, but sometimes that's lacking in film. And I absolutely adore their relationship in this movie. You have two brothers that are two different characters. And they're very distinct and they're very well outlined and it's done from the very beginning of the film. Sometimes it's shown, it's not told, and you get a sense of who these people are. But without a doubt, 100%, you buy into the fact that A, they're brothers, and B, they love each other.
Yes.
They are completely loyal and love each other as brothers. They are there for each other no matter what. One of the earlier scenes in the film, which is also a fun scene, after the wedding, there's a wedding, a mutual friend is getting married. And after the wedding, they end up at a bar. Tom Hanks is depressed. His girlfriend has left him. He's drunk. And John Candy is also drunk, but he's having a great, great old time. And he's hitting on a couple of girls that want to go to Rio de Janeiro that night. And but then Tom Hanks says, you know what? I want to go to Cape Cod. I need to go back to Cape Cod. I have good memories there. I'm going to go tonight. And immediately John Candy's character as Freddie, as his brother, is ready to leave everything. He's going to let the two girls go. He's going to drop everything to give his brother a ride to Cape Cod. And in that moment, it's kind of subtle. It goes by quickly. And there's some comedic moments within it. But it's like, oh, man, they really do a great job of establishing their love as brothers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's just it's smart writing. It's smart relationship development, because although they're two different people, they're brothers. You just buy it. I mean, they don't even look anything alike.
No,
and I completely, you know, they don't. And you get it. Like, they're so connected. So that scene, because they established the relationship so well early, so early in the film and repeatedly throughout, that when that moment comes, that scene that you just described, when, you know, John Candy, we believe that he's truly happy for his brother, because his brother has found love. But then when he says to him, he kind of has to shake him and kind of has to have that come to Jesus talk, where he has to grab him and say, look at what you have. People would kill for it. I want that. I don't have that. And that's why it rings true, is because, you know, this relationship is true. Just wanted to talk about that for a second. I love that relationship.
Yeah, it's great, too, because even early in the movie, in the opening, where the supermarket guy wants the cherries, and they're bad cherries, and John Candy made a bad deal. And you're like, oh, okay, so this is one of the things where the younger brother's always having to step up for the older brother.
Pick up the slack, yeah.
But then in the next moment, John Candy gets him a deal with one of the biggest suppliers chains also. So it's always like, they always have each other's back, and they're always helping, propping the other one up to move forward.
Correct.
There is a back and forth. It's not one brother is necessarily better than the other per se. No, they really work together as a team. They cover each other's flaws. They are really intertwined together. That just what makes them so great. It's what really a brother is all about. Yeah, you do buy that. They look nothing alike, and you're almost kind of like, do they have different dads? Yeah. But no, they are brothers true and true.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that moment about, because the vendor that comes to for the cherries, who, funny enough, is played by Ron Howard's father. He has an interesting name. I think it's Rance is his name, Rance Howard?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Anyway, in that moment, I was always expecting Tom Hanks to be really upset with his brother Freddie for screwing up that order of cherries, because the cherries were all bad. He made a bad deal, and he never goes after him for it. It's like they accept each other for the good and the bad. He understands his brother's flaws, doesn't need it to rub his nose in it, so to speak. They keep the story moving. It just keeps moving forward. And you just get a sense that they love each other no matter what. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. You got another favorite scene for us?
I'm going to get into the real quick, another Eugene Levy scene right near the end, when they've successfully kidnapped Madison to whisk her away and get her back to the ocean. Eugene Levy is with Tom Hanks, and Eugene Levy says, stop the car, I'll get out, I'll be a distraction. And, oh God, he looks at Daryl Hannah and says, get the hell out of here. And Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah take off in the car, and Eugene Levy is going to sacrifice himself as the distraction. He stands in the middle of the street, as if this is his hero moment. And you see the military coming down in the military vehicle coming down the street, and he just takes a stand and he puts his hand up in the air as if he's saying, halt, you will not pass. And it's just when he takes that stance, I was laughing my ass off. And when he sees that the military vehicle is not going to stop, and then he starts waving his hands back and forth like, oh shit. And then he has to dive out of the way, and he falls down the shaft because he's been getting his ass kicked the whole movie. great stuff. Love that scene.
That is a funny scene, but part of me is always like, you know how much time they wasted him stopping the car?
They're catching up. Completely faulty plan. It didn't work at all, and he was not a distraction at all.
Exactly.
It completely failed. So that was a quick one, but I'm going to get into the real meaty scenes, if you will. Yeah, one of the two my favorite scenes. This leading up to my actual favorite scene is the racquetball scene, because we have John Candy attempting to play racquetball while drinking beer and smoking a cigarette.
Yes.
Welcome to 1984.
Yep.
Amazing. And there's a great line in this when Tom Hanks is just talking about how strange these circumstances are with DH, and that she's just acting strangely. Something's not adding up. Even though he's head over heels for her, he's got something's kind of bugging him. Something's eating away at him. And John Candy says to him, you know what your problem is? You're in love with this girl and you're trying to convince yourself you're not. And I just like that line, because that kind of gets to what Tom Hanks's character, Alan, is all about. Like, that's really his problem, is that he's not allowing himself to fall in love in a way, because he's just searching for the perfect woman. And here she is right in front of him, but he's still questioning it. But because he's drinking beer and smoking cigarettes, and that scene ends with John Candy smacking the ball with his racket again, you know, and the ball bounces off the wall and immediately hits him in the head, and he just falls to the floor. Laugh out loud moment, which was done in one take.
One take. Yep.
So love that scene.
Awesome. So my favorite scene of the movie is the Usher scene with Tom Hanks. So one of his employees is getting married, and he just found out his girlfriend's left him, and he's talking to Freddie, and he's explaining the whole thing about what his issue is. Like, he can't love someone else. And while he's trying to spill out his guts to his brother, people are coming in. And he's like, you know, anywhere but the first three rows. And they keep asking about his girlfriend. Where's Victoria at? He's like, oh, yeah, she's not coming. She's sick. And then here he is again, trying to spill out his guts and explain really what, you know, the crux of the movie is about. It's like he can't find himself in a real relationship. And then another person comes by. Hey, where's Victoria at? Oh, flu, not feeling well. And you could see him getting irritated.
He's getting spilled. Yeah.
And then the next person comes up and he's like, what do you want the weather to? You know, she's not coming. And then the poor fourth guy, who, of course, if you watch a Ron Howard movie, he's got to have his brother in
there
it. Like Clint Howard. All he says is hi. And Hanks loses it. Loses on
blows
it.
Broke up.
Yeah, it just blows up. It's just a great scene because it has a dual role. It played for comedy, but it also kind of explains the Alan character and what he is going through. You know, with relationships too, you might think you have the perfect person, and, you know, we never get to see Victoria in the movie. We don't know anything about her. And right. Sometimes, yeah, maybe on paper, she might be everything you want, but it's what's on the inside. And maybe he didn't have that connection. You know, maybe he's just punishing himself way too much over that it didn't work out.
Yeah. Absolutely hilarious
scene. Yeah. I think it's just a great scene. It's my favorite scene of the movie.
I love it, Bill. Thanks for sharing that. And my favorite scene that blew my skirt up, and this might be a little anticlimactic, and I have to say it's the last scene for me, man, is because it's the romantic idealist in me, the lover of all things fantasy. It's one of the ultimate I'm going for it scenes.
Wow.
You know, where it's like, I mean, is it not the most common trope in all romantic comedies? When the couple finally comes together at the end, it's either one of the people will finally make that turn and say, I have to be with this other, this is the one for me. I have to be with that person. And they run through the airport or they get to the plane just in time or whatever it is. This scene is the docks. It's the pier. And she's has to return to the ocean. And finally, Alan says, I'm going to make the commitment. I'm doing it. I'm literally jumping. He literally jumps. So I don't know. It's the romantic me. I like the fact that it's just a really happy, bittersweet ending, but it's something so crazy. Like, he's leaving his whole life basically on land with other human beings to be with the love of his life, who happens to be a mermaid underwater.
You know, it's funny, Jason. I was thinking of you when I was watching that scene because, you know, in other podcasts we talk about the diving.
And I was like, Bill, you know, dude, you know me. I was saving that. Saving it for later.
I got to bring it up. I was like, all right, I'm going to give Tom Hanks a pass. I'm going to give Tom Hanks a pass because we know he's established he can't swim. So his dive was not good at all. It was more like a I don't even know what you would call it, just a jumping thrust kind of thing.
I've got some thoughts.
All right. So Daryl Hannah. I didn't think it was a bad dive, but I was like, you know what? I better ask Jason first.
I agree. This is just going to end up being a new segment for our podcast. It's the diving segment.
Yeah.
This has got to be, it's at least the third time.
Rate my dive.
Judge my dive segment. Because we did it, the first was Romancing the Stone, right?
Correct.
Was there one in Big Trouble, Little China, when they jump into the...
Yes.
Okay. So I think Daryl Hannah's dive is pretty good. It's not great, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay.
She has decent form, kept her legs together. You know, there's probably a little too much splash on entry. I watch way too much diving in Olympics. But Hanks is technically not a dive. I still give it an A+. I give him a 10 because of what the intention behind it is, his motivation and jumping. So I say that Hanks's dive / jump is the best ever because it's for love. That's
right. Okay.
All right. Well, and I'm also saying I agree. And I think I'm glad you brought that up because I think there's a little foreshadowing here, Bill. Is his jump off the pier eerily similar to his jump off the pier when he sees Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump? Is it not almost the exact same jump?
Ooh. I'm going to have to watch those now and just see.
Watched them like, oh my God, he does the exact same movement. Like, it's like this kind of frantic, like, oh my God, because he can't swim, by the way, ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast. That's one of the other things about his character in this movie is that he's deathly afraid of, you know, being in the water because he can't swim. So it's a huge risk for him to jump off the pier into the water to be with her. So he does this weird movement when he kind of falls, jumps into the water. It's like he's flopping around. He doesn't know what he's doing. And it's very similar to Gump's jump off the pier when he sees Lieutenant Dan, when he just kind of steps off the pier. It's a weird movement. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
Also, I honestly think there's some other foreshadowing in this movie, Bill, and I don't know if you picked up on it, but Big is mentioned a few times. John Candy, earlier in the film, grabs Tom Hanks and like starts giving him a noogie basically. Grabs Tom Hanks to give him a kiss on the forehead. And he says, what are you too big? And he kisses and he kisses him on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on when Daryl Hannah gets the movers to put the fountain in Alan's apartment and Alan's climbing around it. And he just repeatedly says, it's big. It's so big. It's big. I'm just saying. There's some foreshadowing another one of his biggest 80s movie.
Wow.
Yet to come.
I think that's a conspiracy video we should make.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you can
revisit. I was picking up on it a little bit.
All right. Was that everything for favorite scenes? Touch everything? Cool. So let's move on to our next segment. Swiss cheese. And why do we call this segment Swiss cheese, Jason?
We call it that, Bill, because although this movie is delicious, it does have holes.
All right. You want me to go first on Swiss cheese?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So my first main thing was, and we kind of mentioned this earlier. So in the course of Alan and Madison going through New York, Alan takes Madison to see this fountain that has a mermaid on it. And it just has just very special to him and, you know, rehash the story of his childhood at the beginning of the film where he jumps off the boat and actually thinks he sees a mermaid. Then... You almost think at that moment, Madison's going to confirm, like, yes, that was me. We saw each other, but he kind of stops himself and doesn't finish the story. And then he mentions that the fountain is going to get torn down, or the whole park's going to be, you know, razzed for apartment building and stuff like that. So Madison buys the fountain and puts it into the apartment. How the hell?
Yeah, this is the biggest question.
Did they get that fountain in the apartment? Impossible. Impossible. A, even if they did get that fountain in the apartment, How long until the fountain falls through the floor into luckily he only lives on the third or fourth floor, because I'm like, all right, it wouldn't fall that far down.
Yeah, it's literally the greatest effect in the movie, actually. It's
yeah,
the greatest special effect, because it is you can't even wrap your mind around it.
Exactly.
Because there's just no, because I'm like, how did they even do this for the movie?
I know, because it's
obviously,
so
you, I mean, there's tricks and stuff, but you know, but I mean, it's still, it looks great. It's just like, how did they, there's no way they, no, this is impossible.
Because it's so funny, like Alan showing up and a guy's just walking out with like a little dolly, like they just put the fountain of dolly and
it in. They like as if they had put it all, moved it all upstairs in pieces and then put it all back together and got the water to operate properly, like get the fountain running, and how they would even do that, where, you know.
In one afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Just imagine.
And then it was like, probably. How the hell would Madison even know where to go to purchase the fountain? That whole process alone would take months.
Oh, it's absolutely 100,000% ridiculous.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's what I love is Tom Hanks's reaction when he comes in to see it. And he just keeps climbing around and going, it's big. It's so big.
Yeah.
Because they literally would have had to torn down the outer wall of his apartment in order to move that thing in with a crane.
Yes.
And there's just no way.
Yeah. And if him and Madison got married, they would move into a house. Man, that thing's going to be a bitch to get in the move. So I don't know.
You think moving a couch or a fridge is an issue? Try moving an entire, what was it, like a 10 by 10 stone fountain?
Yes.
10 by 10 by 10. Mm-hmm. At least. I don't know. It's a great one, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great thing, but it's just like, wow, there's some cheese there. Go ahead.
So also I just want to tell our listeners for this segment, although we're pointing out holes, we're also just pointing out general issues and or questions we may have, with the film. Now this is started kind of near the beginning when Tom Hanks is trying to get to Cape Cod and he ends up on a small, basically dinghy, this little boat with Fat Jack.
Yes.
Fat Jack is running the outboard on this little boat. Yes. And the motor kicks out and dies, and Fat Jack attempts to repair it with a couple slugs and a sledgehammer. Doesn't quite work. It's like, you know what? I'll go back to the dock for the other boat. And Tom Hanks is like, what? What are you doing? He's like, yeah. And so Fat Jack jumps into the water. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to swim back. It's only 3 miles back to the dock. My question is, Do you think Fat Jack was going to make it 3 miles? Do you know how far it is to swim 3 miles, Bill? Have you ever swam 3 miles?
No. That was funny because that was actually my final thoughts. Did Fat Jack ever make it back to shore? I don't care how buoyant Fat Jack is. He didn't make it.
Fat Jack. Yeah, I think that was the last time we see Fat Jack.
Oh, that's another line of from the movie I use all the time, too, is, oh, don't worry, I'm mechanical. I used to say that one a lot all the time, too, when something was broke. I'd be like, oh, don't worry, I'm mechanical.
That's a great line.
Basically meaning, I don't know squat. There's no way this is getting fixed.
Yeah. It's not like saying something like, oh, I'm good with my hands, or I'm a handyman. If you hear somebody say, don't worry about it, I'm mechanical, it's like, oh, they can't even say that right. They can't do it right. Here's another one for you. I know you're an expert on mermaids.
Oh, yeah.
Are mermaids known to have a heightened libido? Is that a thing?
Well, I guess she only had 6 days. I don't know.
I thought you were going to be like, well, Jason, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
You go back in history. Yeah. Research tells us. I just thought that was interesting because it's one thing, obviously, we do. I personally jumped on board with the romance. Like, it's this love at first sight. Like, she's meant to be with him. And maybe she's been yearning to be with him for, 20 years? Since they had first met.
Yes.
Technically in the flashback in the opening. And when they're finally together, she's very hot for Alan and she just can't stop kissing him and wants to make love to him all day and all night. And that's great. But I was just like, why is she so horny? Like all the time. I just think it's funny. It does lend itself to some of the comedy in the film. And it's go ahead.
Well, that does kind of crack up because my next point of the Swiss cheese is It's like, so has Madison been looking for Alan the past 20 years since she saw a little 8-year-old Alan fall off the boat?
Yeah, that's kind of what it makes you feel, right?
Yeah, it was like, there's no mermans back in town that she kind of had a thing for. Or I'm sure other people have fallen off boats that maybe, you know, not that bad looking that she might have been had a thing for.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of, again, you got to go with this fantasy that she knew he was the one. The very first time she laid eyes on him.
Yeah. It is cute when you see the little mermaid girl and she's crying as the boat.
Oh my goodness. That I don't know why that almost broke my heart when I saw it. I was like, oh, wait, she's crying.
Yeah.
Why is she when? Oh my gosh.
It was a sweet little shot.
They literally met each other for, they were like underwater together.
They didn't even touch each other. Exactly. They didn't even touch each other.
I think she does take him by the hands for.
Oh, she does. Moment. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like that instant connection, but she's been like so sad when he goes back onto the boat.
So she's just been hanging off Cape Cod the last 20 years, hoping he just falls off a boat again. And
well, that's where her home is.
Yeah.
That's where her sunken pirate ship is, which is, was really cool. Actually, I thought that was,
yeah, that was cool. That was cool.
House underwater. This is interesting. So when they're trying to come up with a name for the mermaid for Daryl Hannah, and In the midst of the conversation, Tom Hanks looks up and sees the street sign, which reads Madison Avenue, and says Madison. And she says, oh, I like that name. Mm-hmm. And he says Madison isn't a name, which I thought was funny because I was like, wait a minute. Madison's a great name. Maddie? Madison? Absolutely. But this after this film, as it turns out, Madison became an extremely popular name. Like this popularized the name Madison. So a little tribute with that, but I just
all those 30-year-olds now that are called Madison, this is where it came from.
Give your props to Splash.
Yeah.
So holes issues moving on, beer and cigarettes during racquetball.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Hey Bill, why were racquetball courts set up this way where people could watch you?
I would never be able to play.
It's so awkward.
And what are those people doing there? They're just kind of.
Do you watch? Really... I couldn't keep my eyes off the extras during that scene.
Yes.
They're all staring at him. And he's drinking a beer, smoking a cigarette. They're just having a conversation on the racquetball court while there's people either waiting or hanging out, having conversations with other people on stairs outside of the court, looking in. It was weird. That used to be a thing. I don't get it. No. I just don't get it. Did you have any? I only had a couple more here. Did you have any more?
No, I mean, I kind of brought up the one about Kornbluth getting out of the car. I'm like, didn't that waste more time?
Oh, yeah.
Stopping, and now the army is now advancing on them quickly, and he does absolutely nothing. So thank God for that taxi.
Oh, my God. Hilarious. Here's my last one, Bill, for this segment. When all, you know, now it's been revealed to the public that she's a mermaid. It's in all the news, and the government's taken her into custody, and the press is all over Alan, and they come at him as he's going back to his apartment, and they're asking all these questions. It cracks me up that of all the questions to ask Alan about the fact that he's been dating a mermaid, like all they can ask him about is what's it like to make love to a mermaid. I just was like, that's what you're leading with. That's your, like, you know, how did you find out she was a mermaid? Did you know she was a mermaid from the beginning? What do you know about, you know, the fact that mermaids are real? Did that freak you out? How did you meet her? Where did she come from? You could have asked him a million different questions, but they were just like, what's it like? You know, when did you make love to her?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Let's turn him off right away with those questions. Maybe peppered in some softballs. Maybe he would have stopped and spoke, but nope.
Everybody's just curious about sex with a mermaid. That's all that's on their mind. That's what you're going to lead with. Mm-hmm. Well, I understand the curiosity. Don't get me wrong. That's just, I just think that's
curious. Yeah. Just work your way up to that question.
Yeah.
You know? Get some other things first. I mean, you got a story, so no good if you get.
But then it does. It's perfect that when then John Candy comes to save the day and get him out of the ruckus of that scene with all the reporters and says, you know, is anyone here from Penthouse Magazine?
Yeah.
We ain't talking. That's all I got for holes, man.
All right. Let's move on to our next segment. Hey, it's that actor. All right. So in this segment, we'll spotlight a character actor you have seen in many other films. an actor making their big screen debut, or an actor that makes an uncredited cameo. Jason, who's your, hey, it's that actor.
All right. So the very opening sequence of this film is a flashback to 20 years prior, which is early 1960s.
Yes, I knew you were going to say this.
You knew I was going to do this. Yes. It was immediate. So on the ferry coming from Cape Cod on this boat, we have the Bauer family. So you have young Alan and young Freddie, and you see their parents. The dad is played by Bill Smitrovich, who is immediately recognizable, wonderful character actor. Look him up on IMDb. Google him. Bill Smitrovich has done numerous TV and film over the years. He's still working. And I personally recognize him immediately from the classic 1980s TV show Miami Vice. He was in two different episodes, one being the very first, Brother's Keeper. But he was also in Crime Story. He was also in another Don Johnson show, Nash Bridges. Mm-hmm. So Bill Smitrovich is my, hey, it's that actor.
As soon as I saw him, because I forgot that he was the dad. As soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, sweet. Jason has him. I know he's going to pick him. So I skipped him. But he's in one of my favorite moments of Miami Vice when you find out he's the DEA guy on the take. And he's having the conversation with Don Johnson in the car. And he's like,
in the car. That's what I always,
remember. I trusted you. I just love that. That was Don Johnson's Emmy moment right there. I trusted you. Yes.
Brilliant.
I'm glad you did not let me down on that one, Jason. I appreciate it.
I'm here for you.
So my Hey Is That actor, the actress's name is Nora Denny, and who in the credits she played Mrs. Stein. It's like, who the hell is Mrs. Stein? Well, Mrs. Stein was the woman in Bloomingdale's who goes up to help Madison shop for her clothes.
Absolutely.
And I didn't recognize her at first, but when I heard the voice, I'm like, wait a second. I know this voice. So what Nora Denny is known for, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time, she was in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. She was Mrs. TV.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, this is one of my favorite films. And I cannot believe all these times I've watched this film, I never noticed it. And as soon as I heard that voice, I'm like, wait a second. I know this voice. And I looked her up and I'm like, holy crap, it's Mrs. TV from Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. So that's my, hey, it's that actor.
Nice work, Bill Bant.
Thank you.
Are we ready to go into some fun facts and trivia?
Yeah, let's go for it. Facts and trivia. What do you got for me?
All right. So this film is notable, and I am taking this directly from Wikipedia/IMDb, folks. This film is notable for being the first film released by Touchstone Pictures, which was a film label created by Walt Disney Studios that same year in an effort to release films targeted at adult audiences with mature content not appropriate for the studio's flagship Walt Disney Pictures. So there you go.
Yeah, you know what the movie is that made him kind of think about this? They released The Black Hole.
Oh, no kidding. God, I'm waiting for that remake, man.
Yeah, so many parents were upset about the content and having the Disney label on it. And it's only a PG movie. But yeah, there is some kind of scary scenes for kids in it. So that's what made them kind of think about doing the Touchstone Pictures label.
We have to put that on our list, man. Wait, when was The Black Hole released?
I think it might have been 79.
Oof. It's possible, yeah.
Yeah.
But I get it. That film had some scary moments in me. It still does have. Resonate in me, I should say.
Anthony Perkins,
Maximilian.
Yes,
it's all about Maximilian.
Yes,
when he kills Anthony Perkins.
Oh yeah, that's brutal. Tough. That's a tough scene. That's probably PG-13 now.
Yeah. I've got a couple other fun facts here for Splash. You give me the green light.
Yeah, I'm giving you the green light. Go ahead.
So. Daryl Hannah's Mermaid Tale was designed and created by Academy Award-winning visual effects artist Robert Short. The tail was fully functional. I love this shit. This is great stuff. Hannah swam with the mermaid tail so fast that her safety team could not keep pace with her. She kept it on while the cast had lunch. Tom Hanks recalled, later how the other cast members would drop French fries over the side of the tank to her as though she were a trained sea mammal because she couldn't leave the water while her legs were, quote unquote, shrink wrapped.
And yeah, I got a follow up to that too. So it comes to find out that Jarl Hanna, as a kid growing up, was obsessed with the Hans Christian Andersen tale, The Little Mermaid. So yeah, she used to pretend that she would swim as a mermaid, like literally tie her legs and swim in a pool. And she became really good at it. So when they were filming the movie, they initially hired some stunt doubles to do the swimming, but she outswam them.
Right.
So, Ron Howard's just like, all right, I guess you're just doing the swimming stunt. And she was so good at not like blowing bubbles when she swam. So it really seemed like she lived underwater. So she did most of that on her own because she was obsessed with mermaids growing up. To think to be like that and then get your dream job to play a mermaid on film, that must be amazing.
That's great, man. Daryl Hannah's fin weighed 35 pounds. Took technician 3 hours each day to put it on her. And she had to remain still while it was being attached. Here's a cool little fact. The beach where Tom Hanks first encounters the nude Daryl Hannah was formerly known as Gorda Key in the Bahamas. That's the island, but is now known as Castaway Key, which is the private island of Disney Cruise Line.
Oh, no way. That's crazy.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how that all worked out?
Okay. Yeah. I was kind of wondering where they shot that at, because it was like, yeah, that ain't no Cape Cod. That's for sure.
Yeah. I guess they did some shooting in LA and New York and then obviously in Bahamas.
Okay.
So that's really, I didn't do too much of a deep dive into fun facts and trivia, but that's all I've got.
So yeah. So the last, with the casting of the movie. So originally they wanted Tom Hanks to play Freddy, and they were trying to look for all these other big names at the time, like John Travolta, Michael Keaton, I think were the two that were really up for it. And I'm almost kind of surprised Michael Keaton didn't get it because he had worked with Ron Howard previously on Night Shift. So I would have thought that would have been a slam dunk.
Right.
But it was actually one of Ron Howard's assistants who insisted that Ron Howard test Hanks for the main role, because her, like me, was a big fan of Bosom Buddies and actually gave Ron Howard some of the tapes to watch the show and convinced Ron Howard to give him a shot for the lead. And then basically when everyone else kind of dropped out, they put Hanks in there and then went after Candy for the Freddy role.
That is good stuff. That's interesting and funny, jumping ahead, because I'll let you do your own Ebert segment.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, just speaking of which, you know, the fact that Hanks was going to play Freddy, that was Ebert's main issue in his actual review of the film, was that he felt Hanks should have played Freddy and that John Candy should have played the lead as Alan. That was his main criticism.
Yeah. So moving on to the box office, this film opened on March 9th, 1984. And on a budget of $8 million, it ended up grossing $62.6 million. It was the number one movie during its first 2 weeks of release. It knocked off Footloose, which had been number one for three straight weeks. Its highest grossing week was its second week of release, which was made a whopping $6.4 million. Which, if a movie came out with $6.4 million today, that would definitely be considered a flop. But yeah, a big hit for Disney. And definitely launched the whole Touchstone brand. So moving on to reviews. So when growing up in the 80s, there was nothing more exciting than catching At the Movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert on PBS to hear the reviews and watch clips from upcoming movies. So the review for Splash was unanimous. They both gave it a thumbs down.
Oh.
Yep.
Not a good look for our guys.
No. Gene wasn't impressed with Hanks or Hannah's performances.
What?
Yep. And as Jason stated earlier, Ebert thought the movie would be funnier if Hanks and Candy switched roles. And they both suggested that Michael Keaton should have been the lead.
Wow.
So that was Siskel and Ebert's review. I wonder if they do like a go back and go, yeah, we kind of missed the boat on that one.
Well, you know, Ebert is known for doing that, that he, you know, has gone back and revisited his reviews and revised a lot of his reviews. So I don't know if he did that with this one in particular, but You know, it's interesting to think about it with Michael Keaton in the lead. I mean, I think Michael Keaton would have done a fantastic job. I can totally see him in this role.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally made me think. I was like, how has Tom Hanks and Michael Keaton never done a movie together? I was like, oh man, that would have been amazing.
And I have to give credit to another podcast, and I'm not going to name it because I don't want to get it wrong. They brought up a good point how Tom Hanks and Michael Keaton really were going back and forth and would continue to like battle for roles. Well, maybe not so much battle, but be competing for roles throughout the 80s.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They shared that similar, the kind of look in where they were handsome, but not too handsome, very relatable, everyman types that were just extremely capable actors that could play comedy and drama. And
yeah,
the leading man, you know, all in one.
Yep. Love them both. Love them both. And we'll be doing plenty of their movies throughout this podcast. All right. So let's move on to final thoughts. Jason, what are your final thoughts on Splash?
Just how relatable Tom Hanks is as the everyman nice guy. I can't keep my eyes off of him because I can see myself in him. He has a very natural quality about him. There are just things in his face, his reactions to everything, the way he listens to other actors. And I think that's why he can be so funny and then also touching in moments. And again, credit to how lovable John Candy is as like kind of a bit of a almost fraudulent, but mostly womanizing blowhard with a heart of gold in this movie. I miss John Candy, man. And
me too.
I didn't just mean to say Candy Man, but I miss John Candy. And he's excellent in this, just so lovable. So Daryl Hannah, absolutely like flawless looking. And I think her performance is pretty flawless in this. Just again, being able to watch her discover things in this movie is just a lot of fun. I talked about earlier how genuine the brotherly love is between Freddie and Alan. Here's another fun moment for me personally, being a fan of Sam Raimi, the director myself, is when Tom Hanks and Madison Mermaid are walking around New York City and they end up in a restaurant looking at, I think it's a pizza shop.
Yeah.
And in the background, you can see the marquee of the theater and Evil Dead is showing.
Yes, I did catch that. I was reading all those marquees while they were walking around to see what was out during that time. And I did catch
I love it. So one, Evil Dead is on one side of the marquee. And I don't know if this was an adult movie theater, but because on the other side of the marquee, there's a triple feature happening. And the names of the films are The Mistress, Sweet Cheeks, and Skin Tight. Also, there's a great moment. There's another talk about foreshadowing future Tom Hanks films, Tom Hanks vehicles, when he gets upset with Madison at the ice rink. Always has to be in a romantic comedy set in New York City. There always has to be a scene at the ice rink, right?
Yes.
So he gets a little upset with her for not telling him her big secret, or actually not agreeing to marry him. That's why he's upset.
Yes.
Because she is holding back with good reason, because she knows that he doesn't know exactly who she is. And when he gets upset, she gets upset and runs off. So he goes running after her, but he's still wearing his ice skates and the guy tackles him. The guy tackling him, by the way, is one of the screenwriters. And we have Tom Hanks yelling, "Madison, Madison." And all I could hear was, "Wilson, Wilson." Again, I'm telling you, there's foreshadowing all through this.
Yeah.
I was actually moved at one point when there's a sweeping pan of the New York City skyline and the World Trade Center is ever present at the center of that shot. I thought that was that had an effect on me. And it's a beautiful, beautiful shot. And we have Daryl Hannah standing there contemplating jumping back into the water.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful shot. There's a great shot of when she comes back to say she will marry him. It's just a wonderfully composed shot. I just appreciate the composition, the lighting of it. It's very romantic. Like if I had a poster of Splash, that might be the image I use, because he stands up and it's kind of where it seems to be early morning, just before he's going to work at the produce distributor that that shop, and everything has kind of been washed down and has kind of a shiny look in the morning, and the lighting's just right. It's very romantic, and they kiss when she agrees to marry him. I think it's funny that Alan, the character, really has bad luck whenever he wears a tuxedo, because once after the wedding, he gets stuck at Cape Cod. That's when he gets knocked out by the boat in the beginning. And then once after the president's dinner is when Daryl Hannah is revealed to be the mermaid. It's just a not a good night for him. So he had bad luck wearing tuxedos. Here was one of my other, okay, two more final thoughts. Right. Bear with me. I did not remember at the very, very tail end of this film, the underwater city / palace.
I forgot about that too.
I was like, what? Was this added later? Why don't I have any recollection of this? Because he makes a commitment to dive into the water and be with her, mermaid and human, underwater living together, because he can't return supposedly to the surface now after this, and they swim together happily ever after, and the camera pans across under the ocean to see this underwater city. Supposedly that's where she lives, or that's where her kind species exists or are from. I don't know.
I forgot about that too. I really did, because when he jumps in and makes the commitment, like the whole thing is running through my head, like, all right, how do they talk to each other now? Mm-hmm. And then when they saw the palace at the end, I'm like, oh, okay, maybe that solves some of the issues. He has like an actual home and stuff like that. But yeah, I totally forgot about it until I saw it. Yeah. And I can't believe it. How many times I've seen this movie and I did not remember that shot at all. I just kind of remember the two of them swimming off one another.
Yeah, I'll also tell you two reasons why it pisses me off, Bill, Ben, is because it reminds me of Atlantis, which makes me think of what Indiana Jones 4 should have been. It should have been about Atlantis, which was an idea that was being thrown around. Instead, it became Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Cock. I mean, what was it? Crystal Skull?
Jace, just saying, I'm cutting this part out of the podcast just because I don't even want to talk about this.
It also reminded me of Naboo from Phantom Menace. And these thoughts really upset me. I'm airing grievance. I'm just airing some stuff.
I just got to get just it. So out. You know, you're just airing it to me. Audience is not going to hear. Bill. Yeah, the audience is not going to hear any of this.
All right. We're gonna move on. Yeah, I know you're in control, Bill. I get it. You're the editor. You're the executive producer. By the way, The Fifth Element, which came out years later, the Lupus on sci-fi film starring Bruce Willis and Mila Jovovich, I think they stole the entire sequence with Daryl Hannah learning everything she knows from TV. There's a scene in Fifth Element where Lilu, played by Mila Jovovich, is getting her entire history lesson from TV.
That did make me think of, to put a list together of all these movies where someone learns English through TV. Because of course, E.T., probably number one.
Yeah, you could cite so many examples.
Yeah.
Sure.
So we got Splash, Fifth Element, that's a good one too. I might have to start working on that.
Bill, I adore this movie, man. That's really my final thought.
So my final thoughts. So two quick questions. Question one, is Alan Bauer a good boss? And the reason I ask this is he has Jerry working on his wedding day. I mean, come on. What kind of boss is that? Make one of your employees work around their wedding day.
Right.
And then poor Mrs. Stimler, the poor lady got struck by lightning. Send her home. Send her home for a week. Get a temp. Got a temp.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think she gets some paid time off there, I think, or some sort of leave. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't make her work unless she just really, maybe she's just really that committed to her job. I don't know. Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of boss Alan Bauer is. He seems a nice guy, but.
I thought, funny enough, you were going to say, do you think Alan Bauer is related to Jack Bauer? From 24.
distant cousins, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. So my second question, Jason, would you have jumped in the water after Madison?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I'm saying you're Madison. Doesn't have to be the Daryl Hannah version, but if it was your Madison.
Right.
Knowing everything that's going to happen, never going to see family again, never going to come back to the surface.
So you're asking me if it were Kate Beckinsale?
If it were Kate Beckinsale, are you jumping? Are you jumping after Kate Beckinsale?
Man, yeah.
That kind of ups the stakes.
I think what I would do is I would take a running start and do just a leap in the air, and I would scream like a wild banshee and do the biggest cannonball I could going in after Kate Beckinsale. That's a great question, Bill. To be completely honest with myself and yourself, I don't think I would. I think I would probably stay because of the family that I still have on land.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I wouldn't have jumped either. So that is definitely true love that Alan Bauer was shown to do that jump.
Maybe that's just, I'm just not ready, Bill. I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
I have to learn to believe in true love. I have to get to that point. I want to be like Alan Bauer.
Another question.
Go for it. I've got a few myself.
How did bocce balls not become a thing?
Damn you. I was going to end this whole
thing. No way. Are you serious?
No. It really wasn't pre-planned. It was part of, like, in my quotes, like final thoughts and stuff. But I was like, you know what? I'll save this for the end. It's freaking hilarious. For our listeners, the Statue of Liberty tour guide, who's also played one of the writers, yeah, has a line where he just, when he sees Daryl Hannah come up onto the island where the Statue of Liberty is there, naked. And the tour guide says, "It has come to symbolize hope for naked women everywhere." Bocce balls.
Just, I love that.
The way he says, like, because he sees her naked and then all of a sudden it's like, bocce balls. It's like, where, how? And it is laugh out loud funny.
Exactly.
And I think, I don't know, how did bocce balls, say, like, the sales go after this movie?
Was right. Yeah. I, at this point, I still have never played bocce. So.
Oh, you've never played?
No.
It's a great, like, family picnic type of game. Easy enough to play. Get a bocce ball set. You know, you play out on the lawn.
Right.
Just knocking your balls around.
Knocking your balls around. Yeah. I will. I'm going to put on my bucket list. I'm going to play bocce balls at some point.
Yeah. That should be up there with, yeah, shuffleboard.
Yes, exactly.
So I've got some questions.
Yeah, go for it.
How much do you think you've actually learned from television or movies alone? How much of your education do you owe to either television or movies alone?
I'll be honest. When I grew up, I was obsessed with Sesame Street.
Yeah.
So I definitely got a lot out of that.
Yeah, education.
And then Mr. Rogers. And then even in my later years, one of the shows I loved was Reading Rainbow, hosted by LeVar Burton.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, I even remember during the summer, because the show would come on at like 10 o'clock. I would not go out and play with my friends until Reading Rainbow was over.
Dude, you're being specific. That's great. I wasn't expecting those answers. I'm impressed with you consistently and constantly, Bill Bant. Because I was just asking a general question, because Daryl Hannah is the mermaid. Is getting her entire education for TV, and it made me think, gosh, over my life, I wonder how much, you know, outside of actual schooling, was most of my learning coming from watching TV? Is that my generation? You know? Do you understand what I meant? Like that?
Yeah, because growing up for us, there wasn't really that much outside of PBS. It wasn't that much educational television. Everything was toy-based related, whereas now you're TV has to, you know, your TV cartoon stuff almost has to have a message, and it kind of goes that way. Cause I know even with my kids being, there's literally a channel called Baby First, and it's all about kids learning stuff through watching television. But yeah, I don't know how much I would say I learned, but yeah, I remember just loving Sesame Street, and I'm sure that was kind of influence on me.
Now that I think of it too, Bill, is that they did make a movie about this very question. It's called The Cable Guy with Jim Carrey and Ben Stiller.
Well, there you go.
I had a question I was going to ask you. What would a sequel look like? And they did make a made-for-TV movie called Splash 2, T-O-O, Splash 2.
Did I see that?
I haven't.
I'm not even sure if I saw that or not, but that sounds familiar as soon as you said that.
One returning actor for that sequel, that made-for-television movie, and guess who, what character was the only recurring character and actor that was brought back.
My first guess would be Eugene Levy.
Nope.
Then my second guess would be Mrs. Stimler.
You got it. Nicely done. Dude, nailed it. I'm impressed. You are awesome. Yes, Mrs. Stifler. And unfortunately, I don't have the actress's name here at my fingertips. But yes, she was brought back for that sequel. And then they were planning on doing a remake as supposedly as of 2019. It's still in the talks. Of course, they were going to do some sort of gender reversal, role reversal, where the story was more from the perspective of the mermaid. But in this case, it would be a merman starring Channing Tatum.
I could see that. And then, oh, yeah, Mrs. Stimler was Dottie Goodman.
Thank you. Let's give her the credit she deserves. She is hilarious.
Yes, she definitely has some good laughs on that. I'm kind of glad Alan Bauer didn't send her home. We definitely need the laughs.
Right, right. That moment when he talks, when she has she's wearing her bra outside of her clothes.
Yes. Yeah, I remember watching that with my parents, and we were all laughing at that scene.
Here we go. Here's my last question for you. What's your favorite fish out of water movie? And I'm going to list a few. And we had some good ones in the 80s. Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, that's a good one.
Coming to America.
Okay, good.
Big. Beverly Hills Cop. Or Back to the Future.
I would go with... I'll go with Back to the Future.
But Yeah. I mean, that's an easy one for me, too. I mean, as far as that's my favorite. But, I mean, those are all heavy hitters, man.
Yeah, exactly. Because the one that almost feels like is the most true fish out of water of them is Crocodile Dundee.
I agree. Like, it's a little bit more literal.
I wouldn't even think of Back to the Future when you said that. It probably wouldn't even come across my mind. But as soon as you said it, it made sense. But I'm like, yeah, that's definitely
right. Because when he goes back to 1955, he's a fish out of water.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, because I was trying to think about it as Big, obviously he's a child in an adult's body, so that's the walking around as an adult.
Yeah,
as being a fish out of water. Coming to America is a little bit more obvious.
Yes, I just watched I finally got around to watching the sequel, Coming to America.
Right, I was gonna ask. I have not seen it yet. I've heard mixed reviews.
It's very nostalgic, a lot of callbacks, which was kind of cool, but I didn't find it funny at all, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I have no expectations. I'll get around to watching it at some point, I'm sure, but
yeah,
I'm not going to rush into it. And I, you know, this is not an 80s movie, but I just thought I'd give a shout out to this fish out of water movie, Beverly Hills Ninja.
Chris Farley. Yes.
You got it. It's a classic. Come on. All right. Well, I think I'm out of questions for you, Bill, man. Killing it, man. You were killing it with your answers.
Thank you. Just some final thoughts. Really big fan of this film. One of Tom Hanks' early roles. The family film. Like I said, you can watch it on Disney Plus now. Takes out most of the nudity stuff. It's great to see the genesis of Tom Hanks being America's most beloved actor nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you could, yeah.
So, I definitely say, Jason, I strongly recommend watching this if you have not seen it. Yeah, I'd be interested to see if they do the pseudo-remake sequel, how that would come across. It can be interesting. I think I'm good with that.
It could be fun. And I'm going to give a lot of credit to Channing Tatum because I think he could pull it off. I actually am a huge fan of both Jump Street films, 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, the reboot and that sequel. I think he's very funny in it. I think he's got capability to do some physical comedy and he has some great delivery. So I think he could work as a merman and more in the lead role, kind of telling this story from that perspective. But who knows, you know, if that's even still in play at this point. But yeah, I would not be surprised if Disney gave it another shot, you know, tried to do a reboot of some, you know, shape or form, maybe something directly for their streaming platform. For Disney Plus.
Yeah. And now I got to find Splash 2. I know I've heard about it. I've heard about it when you said that, but now I'm like, did I see it or no? I can't remember. That's so bad. There's so many times where I've seen titles of movies, but I know so much about it. I'm almost like, did I see this? I'm not sure. Yeah. And I think that falls in it. Maybe 10 minutes in, I'll finally realize, oh yeah, I did see this. And there's probably a reason why I did forget it. And the fact I didn't remember until you brought it up.
That's funny. But I'm in total agreement with you. 100 million trillion percent recommend this movie. It's so much fun. It's a great fantasy fairy tale romantic comedy, and just watch it for some really great laugh out loud moments. Sit down with the family. Yes, there's a little bit of profanity and brief nudity, but it's a really good hearted film. That's where I'll leave it.
All right. So I think that wraps about up for this week's episode. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe and rate us. You can email us at all80smoviespodcast@gmail.com. Please send us your feedback, questions, or recipes to share. You can follow us on Facebook at All 80s Movies Podcast or tweet us at Podcast All 80s. Join us again next week as we discuss the 1984 sci-fi adventure, The Last Starfighter, starring Lance Guest, Robert Patterson, and Catherine Mary Stewart. Until then, have a totally great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night, world.